Red Film Radio, Torino Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, Italy.
Angelo Cerbi, Red Film Radio from the Lovers Festival in Torino. I'm here with Bruce Hensel. Good morning. Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
One of the directors of Beyond the Opposite Sex, which is a documentary sequel, which is not that usual.
No, it's not that usual, but although it's a sequel, like the first two films, there were individual films where we followed one man and one woman from when they decided until they had their surgery. And then 13 years later, I was in touch with them, and I heard that their lives had changed a great deal. And nobody had ever shown the surgery as we did in the first two films. And we don't feel that anybody, until Beyond the Opposite Sex, have really shown, well, what happens? Do they regret it? What is life really like? There's a lot of celebrity news about people who go through what is now called gender affirmation surgery, but nobody talks about, in the new world, in the changing world, more accepting but still prejudiced, what are their lives like? How does it turn out? And that's what this film does.
And how do they react to your request of being filmed again?
Well, they actually reacted very positively. Both Jamie and Renee are very brave people who also feel that their stories need to be told to help other people. Now, the way I cast them in the original films, the way I found them was unusual. As a correspondent for NBC News, I called all of the doctors who do the surgeries, and I asked them, can you tell me if you have somebody like this and that? We got about 100 letters, and then I had 10 people put themselves on tape and chose Jamie and Renee for that exact reason. They are brave, they are open, they are willing to let both the wonderful director that I hired, Emily Apt, and me as co-director, go deeply into their lives and see how it really turns out.
One thing that really struck me watching the film is that they are grown a lot, of course, because many years passed, but all the struggle that they went through has finished, and now they are like more at peace.
I believe so. I think they are more at peace. But one of the things I found, and when I went to Showtime, who funded and owns the film, I said to them, you know, most people who are going through this struggle see the surgery, if they've decided to have surgery, as their goal. But the fact is, it's only the beginning. Their journey really begins after the surgery. And when I spoke to Showtime about this, I said there are four main characters: Jamie, Renee, the difference between then and now, and middle America, redneck America.
Absolutely. Actually, the shock, well, not shocking, but weird thing is that when presents himself, say, I'm a woman, I'm a Trump voter from Texas.
That's right.
And this really, for us now,
yes,
all the Trump issues all over the planet, it's really weird that a transgender woman is proud of saying to be a Trump voter.
Right. Now, remember, we filmed this a year ago. Now, I was somewhat surprised to find that we filmed in Texas, Kentucky, Louisville, Indiana, middle America, redneck America, where you would think there would be the most prejudice. And we didn't do that on purpose. It just was where they lived. But I found that there were many Trump voters in these states. And I will try to explain to Europeans why that is so. Whatever you think about Trump or about Hillary Clinton, the thing that Trump sold was honesty, whether it's in some people's mind, a little off honesty, not politician honesty, but also America now, America strong. And a lot of people in the redneck states felt that America had been embarrassed and looked weak. So I think that's what he sold. So I found, for instance, in Brownsville, where Ilda, who is Renee's fiancé's family, lives, you can see the Mexican border. And, you know, Trump had talked about building a wall but you still had many supporters. We were struck by that, and also the difference in our first scene, which is a number of adolescent and teenage transgenders.
Yeah.
13, 14 years ago, very few people knew about it. Now, many people know about it and know some people who are going through the transition. One of the major things that both Jamie and Renee say, which is a divisive argument within the LGBTQI community, is that once they have had the surgery, they don't want to be called transgenders. No, they want to be called women and men.
Men, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the other really touching, actually, to thing is that even being in some redneck counties, what politics says is completely different to what people do, actually, because, you know, compassion is far more distributed than we think.
Yes, I think compassion in word is very different than what deep down some people think. And, you know, we found as filmmakers, in the first two movies, it was easy. We had an ending. And as a filmmaker, because I do scripted films and series as well as documentaries, I knew that I had to build the loss at the beginning to show the triumph at the end. And Renee lost his wife because she wanted to be with a heterosexual man with whom she could have children. Jamie left his daughter, and at that point his daughter and wife, and a home that he had built, and went out and had sex with men for 10 years before settling on a relationship with a woman. And as they both and other characters in the movie say, sex is who you want to have sex with. Gender is who you want to have sex as. Those are two very different things.
Yeah. And how? Which was the most difficult moment for you filming this specific movie? Because as you said, you didn't have an acknowledged ending yet.
Yes.
You should have built this ending. You should build the movie toward an ending that,
yes,
you didn't know yet. So how do you work with both of them in order, and how were they cooperative?
They were very cooperative, but the scenes that you shoot when you do a scripted film, you do them out of order, you know where you're going. Any good story, a novel, an autobiography, a film, scripted or otherwise, has to have a beginning, a crisis point in the middle, and an ending. And we didn't know where we were going. That's one of the wonderful things about documentaries. And we had to use a lot of scenes from the old film to show the loss. And once you saw that, you saw a lot of acceptance. Renee's brother, who disowned him emotionally in the first film, had come to accept him. You saw reluctance, acceptance among Jamie's friends. But you also saw, we knew they both had relationships that they were happy in. And we needed, as filmmakers, Emily and I, to take us through, how did those occur? What were the struggles? Renee, and this is an honest point, Renee's fiancé's family, Ilda, did not know he was transgender. And we built and built and built to the moment he was going to tell her so we would see that crisis. Well, I'm a filmmaker. He told her off camera, so we missed it, right? So what do you do when you miss something like that? Documentaries are not scripted films. What you do is you build in the anticipation, and then you need them to talk about the moment. Not as powerful as if it had been scripted, but we still achieved it. That was perhaps the most
maybe
difficult.
Maybe it was not that powerful, but it was powerful enough.
But it was difficult.
Working. It was working, absolutely.
Yeah. Finding the way to show that and show the transition, and Lisa and Jamie have a very stormy relationship. They got married after the film, and they have since separated. So this is not the end either. Renee and Ilda are engaged. But, you know, another thing I discovered during the film, many of these people, we're not talking about the East and West Coast of liberal America, middle America, they have great difficulty making money, supporting
their
families, and this is a part, the heart of their film as well.
And actually, what we can learn from the film is that it is actually true that time can heal barely everything, because, you know, as you show all the rejection that the two of them suffered in the first movie is not like the family's accepting, mothers that were more accepting. So how did they tell you to shoot in a way or in another way, or did they suggest you scenes, or you were just freehand?
The way you do this is, I know a great deal about their lives, is that on a blackboard you write out the potential people you want to interview, the potential scenes. You also talk about various aspects of their lives that you want to see. For instance, the transgender group with the teenagers. That was something that Francine Bergman, one of my producers, found. The University of Louisville Transgender Study Department. So you list this, and then you say, well, how will this fit, and do we want it? How much trouble will it be to get? And some things, as you go on, fall out. Some things fall in. You make discoveries. We knew we wanted to see Renee's doctor because he's had 9 surgeries. We needed, as many people who see the film love, and some don't, we had to show the physical changes because many people wonder about this. As I said, in the first films, we broke ground by showing the surgeries. In this film, I believe we break ground by showing what happens later and how the world has changed, but has the world has still yet to change.
Yeah, but probably the world is changing. For them, the most difficult change in the world is the economic one, not the personal one, because they manage and they're very engaged in the community to tell their stories, because both of them were attending meetings and stuff. While you were editing the film, was there a chance that you can have a different cut in terms of storytelling, but you have to decide which path to follow?
Well, many people talk about how documentaries are supposed to be without agenda. Anybody who thinks that anything is without agenda is not very not looking deeply. There's always an agenda. If somebody agrees to be in a film, they have an agenda. Now, very important, I worked hard with Emily and Francine and Linda and my editor, Ken Schneider, to make sure we took as little agenda out. Michael Moore, for instance, they call those documentaries. Those are not true documentaries. Yeah. He's telling his point of view. We didn't want a point of view. What I wanted to show was their lives, truly without agenda. So they never suggested a scene, but we had ideas about other things, bringing Aaron, a transgender young man who doesn't want surgery in. The University of Louisville, you know, Renee and Jamie, quote-unquote, came out at a time that they were thrown out of the mainstream for. Now, Maddie at the University of Louisville and many of the transgender teens in Texas talk about how much easier it is for them to now announce their desires than before. So I think, you know, knowing what scenes you want, you go from concept down to specifics. We wanted to show their lives. We wanted to show their relationships. But we also wanted to show how the world has changed. So the teens is one way. The study department is another way. Taking them back to some of the people in the first films or other ways. And then people don't realize we had a 1-month shoot, but a 6-month edit. It takes a great deal of time. Plus, we are interweaving 2 stories. And luckily, I had sort of a unique perspective because I've been a journalist on the major network in America for over 25 years. I am a physician, so I understand a little bit. People think that that's what made it easier. I understand a little bit more of the chemical part of it, but also as a filmmaker, you can't construct it completely. You can only talk about possibilities, and as you go along, decide. And then in the editing room, you asked the question, which I have not answered yet, and that is, could you have chosen a different way to tell this story? Sequence determines everything. So we started with the transgender teens. Well, we talked about maybe starting with Renee's brother accepting him. We thought about maybe starting with Jamie singing. She's quite a great singer and songwriter and lives in Nashville now. So the way you lay it out certainly determines, you know, what is the sequence will determine what story you tell. You could have left out the love scenes and not told love stories, but that's what their lives are about. Exactly. And you can certainly manipulate it. You try to manipulate it as little as possible.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Bruce Hensel, director of the Beyond the Opposite Sex.
I'm executive producer along with Stuart Krasnow. The director is Emily Apt. I am the co-director as well and creator. And also, as you know, you will determine if you want to include this, but people often ask, well, how is it science and theater? The two seem so different. But I was a writer, producer, and actor before I ever went to medical school. And I find that both in theater, art, film, and in medicine, the truth is unmalleable. You cannot change it. In law, it
depends
on state.
You can walk around it, but you cannot change
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And those are the things, creating starting with nothing and coming up with something that makes a difference, has an effect on people, is what matters to me. And I hope to be able to do that in scripted series, films, as well as documentaries.
Well, thank you very much,
thank
Bruce.
You.
I'm Angelo Cerbi for Fred Film Radio from the Lovers Film Festival. Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.